Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Souls Channel, Sports and Deference Show. It is a the boxing way with Lady A Wednesday, midday. God, we know we did midweek. We did midweek last week. But first of all, we give all honor and praise and homage. Father God, dear Lord, we thank you for another day. And more importantly, have your will and way. We thank you, Lord, for the little things we so largely take for granted. Thank you for being our God. Thank you for blessing me. Thank you for blessings.
Love.
Coming, blessings past and blessings in the future. We thank you, Lord, more importantly, that you give us so much not what we want, but what we need. And we need thee every hour, dear Lord. And we ask you to bless the panel, bless our friends, my family here and in Brazil. We ask you to help Josiane, who's going through a little problem with her mother there, but you are the one and only true God. May not be everybody's God, but you're God all by yourself. And we thank you, Lord, for this opportunity. Clothing our right mind. Thank you for this opportunity. As a man once said, dear Lord, although we do not live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we don't live on a Park Avenue bench. And we ask these blessings in the name of your darling son Jesus, who gave us the right by down on the cross to the tree. Jesus name the Lord, amen. Dr. Stanley Sports up on the Blake, better work rainbow, so the channel sports up in the show. It is a little weekend early show. Lady A was on conference call today with the conference call ahead, next week. And really, can you believe that? It's May ready. May 5th, the day before the birthday of the greatest baseball player that ever lived, Willie Howard Mays and Floyd Money. Pretty boy Mayweather Jr. will go up against Miguel Cotto. And I've also got the special guest calling in to join us, too. Looking for Mel Ghost. Bell Smith to join us here, but the first lady, my buddy, I got a call today. I hadn't talked to Mr. Greg Jones in a while, and he gave me a shout. And he was talking about Jackie Robinson, lady. He's talking about Jackie Robinson, April 15th, 1947. Baseball season used to start in the middle of April, and Jackie Robinson had his debut April 15th, 1947. I think he was 0-3 or 1-3, debuted at first base. As I think about that now, I remember my dad, the first baseball glove I remember my dad telling me he was going to buy me a baseball glove. And I remember the anxiety of me waiting for my dad to bring the glove home. And I see my dad coming down the block now. I see him coming. He had a green box underneath his arm. And I didn't see no glove. And he came into the house, and he had a chocolate brown first baseman's mitt. Jackie Robinson first played, when Jackie Robinson first came into baseball, the Dodgers put up Jackie at first base, and it was because of a safety measure to a certain degree, because they didn't want Jackie to play second base, and a lot of people tried to slide and hurt Jackie. And with that, Jackie Robinson, 1947, became the first ever Rookie of the Year winner. That was the inception of the award. Jackie was the first ever to win the award, and he's the last first baseman in history of the 20th century to lead the league in stolen bases. Won Rookie of the Year in 47, MVP and batting champion in 49, and he also led the league in stolen bases that year. Jack Roosevelt Robinson. You can't say enough about what he did. Buck Leonard, the great Buck Leonard, called the black Lou Gehrig, and Lou Gehrig could have been the white Buck Leonard. And he had told me that Jackie was the best player suited for the that situation. Not necessarily the best player out of Negro Leagues, but with his being married to the lovely Rachel Robinson, saw her about a few weeks ago, being 27 years old, being a guy from California for some military time. In fact, the thinking was his co-mingling, his coexisting with white people was advantageous into him being the first black player. In fact, Duke Snider was a big Jackie Robinson fan. Duke Snider tells a story of watching Jackie in college, and he saw Jackie coming up the field and throwing his glove down, and he asked Jackie, where was he going? And Jackie said, well, I'm going over to Broad, you know, a guy from USC and all that good. Jackie Robinson, in between innings, went to Broad Jop and came on back and played shortstop. First ever four-letter man in the history of UCLA, okay? The first ever track, baseball, football, okay? And track, baseball, football, and baseball. Baseball was the one that he was least efficient in. And a lot of people thought Jackie Robinson should have been a pro football player. Great running back. Well, number 28, number 18 as a basketball player. They're all here. Mel Cosell is here. C-Wings, did you get us? Did you get C-Wings in yet? Okay. Mr. Jones has joined us today. Greg, thanks a lot for being with us. This is part of our panel. So, no, just listen in, join us, and we want to welcome you into Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soda Channel, Sports In Depth the show. And if you thought today would kick me into this talking about Jackie Robinson, the senior Jackie won. In fact, two of the most prestigious awards in the history of baseball were won initially by African-Americans. Don Newcomb in 1956 became not only the first pitcher to win the Cy Young and MVP in the same season, but the first pitcher ever to win the Cy Young Award. And you know, Jonesy, what I was saying, you have to look back at how outstanding both Jackie and he had to be. Both of them had to be to win that award, you know, with all Caucasians voting for it.
Right. Absolutely. Can you hear me, Doc?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, when you think of the opportunity now that African-American ballplayers have today, you know, because of the sacrifice of what this man had to go through, and many of them, and this is no disrespect to today's ballplayers, you know, in terms of the talent and the skill that Jackie had playing the game, you had to really be well-rounded on the field, and you had to deal with a lot of foolishness off the field. You know, it's really a phenomenal, I mean, he's really a phenomenal individual, and the door that he opened is not just for baseball, too. I mean, other sports as well.
It was an entrance into a whole lot of doors. I mean, Joe Louis had been the guy before, who, you know, you look at Joe, who got a shot at the title, the first time a black man ever won heavyweight championship world, no, December 26, 1908, Jack Johnson. And,
wow.
You know, I said something today, you know, that in our society, it's a sad commentary, you know, and people are talking about how things are getting better and all that stuff, and yet there are less black ball players in baseball today than there were 20 years ago. And I talked to Ken Griffey Jr. about maybe 15, 14 years ago, and we were sitting there talking. I said, you know, kid, you know, there's less black ball players in the game today than there were 20 years ago. And that was 20 years before, 15 years ago, I was talking to him. And in our society, you know, it's a sad thing about racism, but racism in America never subsides, but always increases. You know,
Frazier mentioned the great Jackie Roosevelt Robinson, because as I had said in the report for this very show, we called the late great professional wrestler Bobo Brazil was known as wrestling's Jackie Robinson, and that he was the first bona fide a superstar of a black in the world of professional wrestling. And he was basically known, as many called him, the wrestling version of Jackie Robinson.
And you always start this when you always come in here with these questions that are so profound, and then you get everybody to rolling because you get me rolling because, and you talk about because you know there was a quota system in the major leagues, you know, and one of the reasons why Roberto Clemente, the great Roberto Walker Clemente, didn't come up he was in the Dodger organization, but you know the Dodgers had kind of really too many black players. I mean, it's amazing that nobody looked at how exceedingly well they were doing. 47. 49, Jackie Robinson, 49, Don Newcomb wins the Rookie of the Year. Okay, 49, Jackie wins MVP, 51, 53, 55, Campanella wins MVP. I mean, so you've got five MVP winners, No, you got three, I mean, but five, because Newcomb wins MVP in 56. So you're talking about 49, 51, 53, 55, 56, where these guys won the MVP. You're talking about Jackie, Joe Black, Newcomb being rookie of the years. How could you have too many? But you see, I never forget what Gary Ward once told me that, you know, and he was talking about the Yankees, but it's America. America wants to win with a certain type of player, which is basically saying they want to win with a white player. But Clemente was in the Pirates came to the Dodgers and told them, because they did some really absurd thing to Clemente. He would be in a game and they would take him out the game. He'd be on deck to hit and they'd call him back. He would be in the field and they would call him up the field. Oh, they wouldn't play him. They were trying to hide him. But the Pittsburgh organization came to the Dodgers, and I believe it, a lot was because Branch Rickey. I don't know if Rickey was with the Pittsburgh then or not, but they told the Dodgers, look, do what you want with him. We are taking him, okay? So you might as well play him. We know what he can do. And for my money, the greatest defensive right fielder that ever lived, Roberto Walker Clemente, number 21, and the only player in the history of baseball whose final hit was number 3. 000 here, 3,000 base hit. I've got Lady A. I've got Mel Cosell. Sea Wings, are you with us? Okay, well, I got another call here. 860-982-8493. You're listening in. You join us. You have anything to say? I'd like to have you with us. Who's calling in? Okay, I guess they'll just listen. Lady A, I want to get back to you, the first lady of sports and the sweet science here on the Blake Radio Network. An interesting thing today. You on the conference call, Floyd Mayweather Jr. against Miguel Cotto. They're going to clash on May 5th, the day before the birthday of the greatest baseball player that will ever live, has ever lived, and will live, Willie Howard Mays. Cinco de Mayo is the 5th, and on that Sunday, 6th of May, Willie Mays will be 81 years old, the only home run hit ever lead the league in home runs, in stolen bases. You just can't say enough about Willie Mays. There are only four guys in what I call the double 500, 3,000 hit club. Only four guys who've got over 500 home runs, 500 doubles, and 3,000 bases. The first to ever do it was Willie Mays. The other three, Hank Aaron, number 2, Eddie Murray, number 3, and the only Hispanic in that club is Rafael Palmeiro. Lady A, losing that as a subway into meeting you, talking to you. Let's talk about the conference call today. Okay, Floyd Mayweather Jr., you know, said there was a host of crazy questions, and you came up with something that was so profound as you are with your genius. You know, you look at the clientele, you look at the core fighters he fought, and how can you question, you know, his credibility, and also in today's market, he's the best there is, Lady A.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I didn't get a chance to get in the conference call and ask the questions I actually wanted to ask him. But, I mean, like, he's fought a plethora of fighters where you can actually sit down and say, hey, you know, why does everyone continually question his dominance in the sport? You know, I mean, just read out the names. You've got Shane Mosley, Juan Manuel Marquez, Ricky Hatton, Oscar De La Hoya, although he's an old fighter at the time when he fought him in 2007.
No, he was still the same fighter. The same fighter that Pacquiao fought. You know, you're bringing up a point, and you know.
But you keep going down the line, then. I mean, line. Jab Judah, Arturo Gotti.
You bring up a valid point. I mean, without question, you're on the money. And only that, Mayweather fought all these guys before Pacquiao fought them. They questioned the credibility of Mayweather. They questioned the ability of these guys. And yet, when Pacquiao fought them after being beaten by Mayweather, by being older, all of a sudden they became credible and affordable.
Well, I mean, I thought it was interesting in a conference call that he said, one of the things he said was, you know, he was asked about him retiring at age 38, because he had mentioned that in the workouts, prior to the workouts. And, you know, I think that being said, he said, you know, I don't take anything away from Manny Pacquiao. You know, Manny Pacquiao is a great fighter. But, you know, obviously, he said a lot of people think that, you know, and I think that he lost that fight to Marquez. This is what he said. I think he's like, I personally think he lost the fight to Marquez. So, because that question, that statement came to light because someone directly asked him, due to the fact that you know, the judges had made such a bad call with the fight against Brandon Rios, was he worried about the judges now making an improper decision now with the fight against Cotto?
Mm-hmm.
And which is a question that we brought to light several times on the show.
Exactly.
And I think that his response was, you know, was there a question in that fight as well between Marquez and him? And he said, hey, you know what? When Marquez fought Pacquiao, he said, I personally thought Marquez beat him.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that that kind of injected a little bit more into the whole thing with the fight between him and Pacquiao. And when he says something like he wants to fight again in 2012, I mean, I think he's still opening the door for maybe another possibility. But then at the same time, he started mentioning something about him trying to stop fighting at the age of 38. So, you know, just a little food for thought, I think. You know?
Lady A, you've been around both guys. You're an expert. You're a genius in this business. Your feelings, okay, your gut feelings, are we going to see, or is it Nunca, Pacquiao, Mayweather? You know, you've been about around both guys. You've met both guys. You know both guys. They've spoken to you. You've spoken to them. What's your, are we going to see Pacquiao, Mayweather?
I think a big question has to do with Floyd's demands. I mean, well, I remember when we talked to Melvina Latham, one of the things I injected into the conversation was the fact that, you know, how do these guys demand, like Floyd Mayweather, the whole thing about Olympic-style testing, you know? And I think Floyd is very adamant about that. I think he's adamant about...
Why? Now,
because he said...
Hold on. Dr. Stanley's Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow, so the channel Sports Network is the show. The Boxing Way with Lady A, who we're going right now, and special guest Greg Jones, of course. Mo, go. So, Junior's here. Got another caller in. And you want to speak or just listen in? I mean, no. I've talked to Ken Smith, number one boxing writer of our generation, Daily News, Oscar De La Hoya, Vivian Harris, all guys who said that Mayweather is on the right page with this. I mean, my own Dr. Sharp, Dusty, feels that he says the same thing, that Mayweather's right, but who is Mayweather? Who do you have to be? 2 and 2 is always 4. Lady A, the floor is yours.
Well, I think that Mayweather just, you know, he doesn't want, if he loses, he wants to lose fair and square. I mean, and he said it a few times in the media conference. He said, I don't want there to be any kind of negative light projected on my record, you know, and he just basically said, I will fight the best, just take the test. And he's adamant about that.
Lady A, he's been running this Olympic style testing thing for the longest, okay? I mean, first of all, I didn't know that Floyd Mayweather was the athletic commissioner, all right? I didn't know he got to make the rules, okay? Mm-hmm.
Rooney, you know what?
No, Rooney, I need you to stop.
Listen, I don't care. See, the problem here is, it's two thoughts here. So what? I mean,
fight the guy.
No, Rooney. You know,
everything is different.
Rooney.
I want
Rooney
to the pay per view. I want Olympics. Fight the guy if you want to fight him. I want to honest Jimmy Jabber.
Rooney. My thing is this. First of all, let's not knock him for the Olympic style testing. Okay? I mean, okay, let's go both ways, Rooney. I mean, hey, don't come here slanted, okay? Because the idea of testing is not a bad idea. I remember me and John McEnroe were at courtside at a Knick game one time, and McEnroe said the same thing. He said, you know, there's no testing in boxing. And somebody who got caught and what had happened, the one place that they test, that's where he got caught. But let's not act like that this young man is out of line. I mean, there are so many things wrong with boxing. Is he out of line for saying, hey, man, I want to test the guy?
Well,
I mean,
you know,
Doc,
if I could just inject something in here. I mean,
my thing here, too, I think we've all concurred that, and it's your guy, Rooney. It's your guy. I'm going to quote your guy. We've all concurred that's Aaron, but never forget, Ray Charles Leonard beat every great fighter of his era. And Ray said something, never forget it, in the press room on the night that Frankie Randall was going to be the first man to ever beat Julio Cesar Chavez. But, you know, your guy almost beat him. Our man,
I just know almost about it. My man Laporte did beat him that night at the Garden.
I'm going to tell you what Chavez said to dovetail on what you said. When they asked Chavez, had they gave the decision to Laporte, the great Julio Cesar Chavez said, I wouldn't argue. But the thing I'm going to hear with Ray Lennon said.
And that's a direct quote, Doc, that he said in the papers the next day. Good job by you. That was a direct quote from Cesar. If Laporte had gotten the decision, I would not have argued. And the reason he wouldn't have argued is Laporte beat him and should have gotten the decision.
Listen, you know, like I said, that's what he said. And this is what your man said, which should fit Pacquiao. There comes a time when it ain't about the money. It's about being a champ. And don't tell me how askew, how off-center, how outrageous Floyd Mayweather is. I'm going to tell you what Eddie Mustafa did when he went down to fought Marvin Johnson. I'm going to tell you what Don King said when De La Hoya fought Trinidad. And they gave the guy whatever he wanted because they said, you know, all I want to do is get him in the ring and fight him. Okay, so you know what? You can have whatever you want. So I don't care how outrageous. And the thing that bothers me here is, you know, people are acting like this young African-American guy is crazy. I'm wondering if a white fighter had said this, had a white fighter made these demands, how much credibility would there be? How much,
tremendous
idea.
Listen, let me just one quick statement, and then I'll give the floor to AD, the lady A&U, okay? But just quickly saying, Doc, in all honesty, the average fan, and I think I can speak for the average fan, being both a so-called expert and a fan, average fan is getting tired of the whole thing, Doc. They're tired of them dragging us out. We've been wanting to see this fight for 2 years. They're like, hey, either get it on or forget about it, man. The average fan is getting tired of hearing about it. They're starting to lose interest. Either you guys are going to fight or go on a bunch of business and let's see who else is up and coming. That's what average fan is saying.
But Rooney, I think, you know, the more I hear Mayweather speak, and Doc and I had the privilege of going to the Ortiz conference, the more I hear him speak, the more I say to myself, well, hold on a second. He is leaving the door open, you know, for this guy
wide
to come
open.
In. And it's mostly Bob Arum that keeps getting this guy in other fights. You know, and you know, you kind of got to sit back and
fight
say, well.
Fight his own people, Rooney.
Right.
Fight
I mean,
the guy was going to fight Cotto again. He was going to fight Cotto again.
And I'm not saying Arum doesn't have a lot to blame of it, Doc. And I'm
Say that again. Say that again about Arum.
I'm not saying that Arum is without blame by any means. What I'm trying to say that the average fan doesn't want to hear jibber jabber on either side. The average fan just wants them. They can't get along, then they should get along. That's the idea of the average fan. The average fan just want to.
Bro, he's a great line from Muhammad Ali. Joe, if we can't get along, let's get it on. Hold on.
The average fan doesn't care.
There's no question,
Rudy. The politics of it, whose fault it is. The average Joe who once was just saying, hey, let me pay the $65 and see it on pay-per-view, or whether let's see it. I want to see how this turns out. That the average fan, I'm talking about the average fan, not a so-called expert. Average fan don't care about all that doc and all these politics and who wants testing, who wants. Average fans want to see the fight.
Doc, if I could just say so, I think that, I think that, you know, the window is closing because he said he wants to, you know, stop. I think he says he thinks he's done before he's 38. So, you know, in him saying that, he's kind of shutting the window. But at the same time, in the same breath, he said that he wants to fight again before the end of 2012. So, you know, the window is open. And I don't think that, I mean, a lot of it, the more that I hear him say things like that, the more I say, well, you know, what is the problem? You know.
Bob Arum is the problem.
I mean, it just seems to be pointing more in that direction. Obviously, you know, we've talked about De La Hoya, we've talked about Cotto, we've talked about Mayweather. What do all three have in common? That they used to fight for Bob Arum.
And it's amazing, too, now that when they lead Arum. Hold on. Jonesy, did you want to say something here, Jonesy?
Yeah, I wanted to find out why doesn't Manny Pacquiao want to take this test? What is the issue with on his end?
Well, originally, I think Mayweather's request.
Why does Manny want to take this test?
Well,
what is Manny doing to make this happen?
Right.
He benefits also.
Right. Huh? Well, that's a good question. But two points were brought up. Number one was Freddie Roach. I responded and said something about Manny feeling drained, you know, with this testing or whatever, which originally I think when it first came out, and I think it was back three years ago when they were originally going to sign, it was going to be blood tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Freddie Roach said, you know, hey, you know, Manny would state he would be too drained or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the second time it was brought up, then I think it was urine. And then I after that, I didn't hear anything else. But it's a good point, and that's the reason why I'm saying to myself, why won't he fight? Second thing was, hey, Bob Arum, because to me it's like, Everything is set in stone. There's never an issue with the money. It's never okay. So then, you know, and then there's a flip side to it, which was Dusty had brought up before. Remember, it was the part with the pay per view.
Mm-hmm.
Remember,
mm-hmm.
And obviously, Miguel Cotto didn't have a problem with the numbers. You know,
no.
So the more it just seems
everybody
to point more in that direction.
Aaron, Lady A, everybody that sees Aaron all of a sudden becomes the bad guy, but yet they're richer and they're happier. And I've said this before. It's an amazing thing that had Don King been the guy trying to put this fight together, how ostracized he would have been. How much negativity would he have gotten? How did he say, man, how can he can't make this fight?
We've mentioned in the show that a lot of it, you know, we've talked about the money side of it, all right? We've also talked about Manny Pacquiao being Bob Arum's cash cow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously every fight that he fights is almost a sellout crowd.
He's going to keep,
you know, pushing this guy till he can't push anymore. You know,
well, Manny is okay in 3 years. In the 3 years time, over this 3 year period, Manny has fought. First of all, would that be correct? He has fought in this 3 year time frame, and he is being tested. All right, so he's being tested, and his opponents are being tested for the fight that he's had within the last 3 years. So what is the issue now with him and Mayweather coming to some sort of compromise, some sort of gray area? Bob Arum would want to make this happen.
No, he doesn't.
He stands
to make a lot of money. No. You see, there's two thoughts. Doc Stanley's Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Soul, the Channel Sports Network Show. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back. We're going to answer that question, why Bob Arum doesn't want to make this fight and why he hasn't made this fight, and some history of some fights that Bob Arum could have made and he didn't make. Because it did not benefit Bob Arum. Doc Stanley, Sports and Never on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Show, the channel, Sports and Never, the show. Of course, they're here. Melco Cell. But Rooney, boy, Rooney be coming at you, boy. Lady A, the first lady of sports on the Blake Radio Network. Guest Mr. Jones and another guest who's listening in. We'll be back in just a minute, little promo, and we'll come back, and I will give my side of why Bob Arum does not want this fight, and with the money he's making, Bob Arum doesn't need this fight. And Rooney, you know, the sad part about this, Rooney, is that, and you're talking about the average boxing fan, but they're not concerned about the average boxing fan. They're only concerned about what's best for them. And the boxing fans, as you say, Rooney, are the one that's suffering. And don't forget, Doc Stanley Sports and Death on the Blake Radio Network, and DocStanleySports.com is the site. And, of course, we've got a bobblehead autograph, Manny Pacquiao, Dow. We've got autograph gloves by Floyd Mayweather Jr., Muhammad Ali, the hand wraps, as Lady Zay from Roy Jones Jr., more to say, and two bats from two of the four guys ever. $5,500, $3,000, but give me a minute. Nobody said why. Merchant time.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guests are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You are listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on Double Lake. You ready to know? Rainbow Soul, the channel, Sports in Depth, is the show. And we're right back here as we continue the second part of Boxing Way with 88. And, of course, Step Junior, the Jones Jones. We had another listener call in. They've kind of left here, but you're back. And it's about the sweet science. It's about a host of things here. And, of course, I'll talk a little Brazilian music here. Brazil, as you know, is where I should be going down the line. And before then, I'm going to take you back into the Trust in God, Sports and Death, Artifacts Hall of Fame. Baseball-wise, one of the prized possessions in the Hall of Fame is, as Mr. Jones brought up, Jack Roosevelt Robinson. Back in 1997, they had a special forum where they honored Jackie. And some of the guys who were there, Frank Robinson, who happens to be the first African-American manager in history of baseball, the only African-American player to win a Triple Crown, and the only player in the history of baseball to win the MVP in both leagues, Ed Charles the Glider, the key to the third baseman, the Mets won it all back in 1969. And they gave us a baseball there, and the baseball had a autograph on it of Jackie Robinson. And in Sports in Depth, in my Trust in God Hall of Fame, I always try to do something a little different and unique. And I said, and all great and wonderful things come from God. I said, I'm going to take this ball and have something different done with it. So I'm going to try to get as many people who played with and against Jackie Robinson to sign the ball. And that's what I did. And I looked at the ball, and I'm looking at it now, shooting it at you. And some of the autographs on there are really, really amazing. I mean, some of the guys that he played with who's on this ball, Roger Craig, Duke Snyder, and the Marble Champion of Virus Descent, Pee Wee Reese. Foles, Yogi Berra is one of them. Stanley Frank Musial. Don Mueller, the man who fought Willie Mays, came in second for the batting title in 1954. Whitey Ford, Edward Whitey Ford. The winningest pitcher percentage-wise in the history of Yankee history, one of the greatest left-hand pitchers to ever play the game in either league, Stanley Frank Musial, three-time MVP, seven-time batting champion, and the man for just missing one home run in 1948 would have been the last National Leaguer to win the Triple Crown. The last National Leaguer to win the Triple Crown is a St. Louis Cardinal, Joe Ducky Medwick. And then I look at other names who are on here. Don Drysdale. Yes, Drysdale was on that 1955 team and won the World Series. Ralph Howell. We also have, I guess, the name of names. We'll stop our little visit here. Joseph Paul DiMaggio. Three-time winner MVP. Won the batting title back-to-back. Considered to be the greatest Yankee of all time. In some people's mind, the Yankee Clipper. And, you know, DiMaggio was not only a three-time winner of the MVP, but Joe lost three valuable years in the military. Other things in the Sports and Trust Hall of Fame, I was looking at some things that boxing pitchers, and as I was going through them, there was one, and I try to stay with a historical standpoint. Bo Jack. The significance of the Bo Jack or the best pitcher is a great champion, but Bo Jack is the man who headlined Madison Square Garden more than any other fighter in the history of boxing. Madison Square Garden. He did that 21 times. Doc Stanley, Sports Step on the Blake, but it never claimed both of the channel, Sports Step on the show. And we're back. And we left off with a big question. Arum. And, you know, Bob Arum, unbeknownst to a lot of people, I remember Don King, the Tito Trinidad and De La Hoya fight. And Don told me, I see Don now at South Street Seaport, and he says, hey, look, you know, I gave Bob everything he wanted. Everything he wanted, and told him, if this is such a great deal, okay, when my man wins, I'll give you the same deal. As everybody know, that rematch was never made. Oscar, to his credit, tried to make the fight, but Tito at that time was too big. And unbeknownst, and our good friend Tim Smith alluded me to this, Antonio Margarito was offered $4 million to fight a rematch against Paul the Punisher Williams. Williams had beat him. And Bob turned the fight down because he had a problem with somebody in the Williams camp. And this has to hit you pretty hard. What are you having a problem have to do about making a great fight for boxing number one? What do you have a problem with somebody having to do with you turning down the biggest payday in the history of your fighter? What are you having a problem have to do? You're going to make some money. As you know, turn down the fight, Margarito fought Sugar Shane Mosley, and that's where he got caught. Had he never fought Sugar Shane Mosley, maybe to this day, we would have not known what Margarito was doing with his loaded hands, and we may not have had a total Margarito. So, Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake, with the Network Rainbow, so the channel, Sports Network for the show. We're going to leave the Hall of Fame. Some people say, Doc, do you have anything in there that's not sports related? Entertainment wise, an autograph. Miles Dewey Davis album, Junior. Miles, born in St. Louis. Dizzy Gillespie, who was ironically the trumpet player that Miles Davis supplanted when Dizzy left Charlie Parker's band. An autographed picture, but none other considered the greatest female jazz singer of all time, Ella Fitzgerald. The Whispers, an autographed album by them, Scotty and Walter. To me, the greatest female singer. She was voted as the number one singing voice of all time. Ree from Detroit, Aretha Franklin. This weekend at Lehman College, Smokey Robinson is there. Last weekend, the only disco artist ever to win a Grammy, Gloria Gaynor. Was at the legendary Lehman College. Lady A, coming back to you.
You forgot somebody, Doc.
Who's that?
Your girl, Phyllis Hyman.
I didn't forget Phyllis. Phyllis was, you know, it's funny you say that. But Phyllis, who I happened to work with as I, you know, do stand-up comedy, open for her. Phyllis started out at the legendary Russ Brown's restaurant, which was owned by Art Russ Jr. and his buddy. She got her start there. And the rest, they say, is history. How renowned was that restaurant? Wolf Frazier once told me, I see Clyde getting ready to go downstairs to broadcast the game. I said, Clyde, did you ever go to Russ Brown's? And Clyde said, Russ, put his tea in lemon. I said, Stan, that was the place to be. Hey, if you didn't go there, you missed it. Art Russ Jr. said he came in one night, Rooney, and he looked to his left, and there was John Lennon and Yoko Ono. Looked to his right, and there was Miles Davis. And that more, no more needs to be said. Lady A, this weekend, we got, and I'm going to need you to dovetail us too, Rooney. And Rooney, you said, well, you know, you're not going to go against Bernard Hopkins and Chad Dawson. Lady A, what did you, are you going to go? Is Chad Dawson going to pull this thing off this weekend in Atlantic City?
I'm not impressed with him.
I'm either, Doc. But I have to say one thing about Bernard Hopkins, Doc. Whether he wins the fight or loses the fight, because I think, well, due to the shoulder they gave Dawson a decision before, and no contest or whatever. But you know what? Even though I'm like Lady A said, I'm not super enthused about this fight. But the one thing about Hopkins, Doc, that I'm waiting to see is, you know, boxers have a tendency to, as we say, get old overnight. I mean, one night they'll look like they have their usual thing going and look great in the fight. And the next thing you know, the next fight, they just look old. They look slow and lethargic and, you know, their career is over. So that's where we get the phrase, boxers sometimes tend to look old overnight. And I'm wondering when it's going to happen to Bernard.
Well, that's a good point.
And he actually is old, by boxing standards, he actually is an old man. And I'm waiting to see the day when it looks in the ring like the guy just got old. So far, it hasn't seemed to happen to him, but I'm watching him closely.
Well, you know, you wonder if you're going to see the Bernard Hopkins that showed up for Kelly Pavlik and annihilated Kelly Pavlik, or if you're going to see another Bernard Hopkins.
We will never see that Bernard Hopkins again. We will never
see
that.
You don't know.
That was the greatest night of his life. That was the greatest fight he ever fought. We will never, ever see that Bernard Hopkins again.
Bernard has a way of getting in people's heads, too. Look what he did to Jean-Pascal in the middle of him coming out for one of the rounds. He starts doing push-ups. I mean, you know.
Pasquale is a nobody. He's a nobody. I mean, anytime you get a draw in your own country, that tells you the story. You get a draw in your own country. I mean, he couldn't be the over. I mean, we have to go back and evaluate just how good is Jermaine Taylor. I mean, he beat Bernard Hopkins twice, and what has he done since then? I mean, Bernard Hopkins is a great champion. Bernard Hopkins is not a great fighter.
Well, you know, Doc, we've had this discussion before, and I agree with you when you say he's not a great fighter, really not in my book. But if you were just to take out, if you hadn't seen him, And you were just looking at his record, his middleweight champ record, number of title defenses, so on and so forth. The guy has Hall of Fame numbers, Doc.
There are a lot of guys in Hall of Fame that shouldn't be there. Okay, Hall of Fame numbers and a Hall of Fame player, two different things. I mean, you look at Bernard Hopkins, and it's amazing, and you can throw this thing out.
Doc, your boy is going to be there this next month, by the way, now that you said the Hall of Fame.
Well, you mean one after next, Tommy Hearns?
Durant. Oh, well, Tommy Hearns is getting inducted, but Durant is going to be there. Marvin Hagler and Sugar Ray Leonard.
Well, you know, and now out of that group, you would say, wow, four great fighters. No. Durant, Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, yeah. I'm suspect on Marvin Hagler. Jonesy, are you a boxing guy, Jonesy?
I'm here.
Are you a boxing guy?
Absolutely. 100%.
I mean, your thoughts on here. Who do you like in the Hopkins and Chad Dawson fight?
Well, Bernard Hopkins, he's a freak of nature. And you can get old very quickly. There's going to be that fight where he will become the 46-year-old that he is.
Mm.
It may be this fight. We've seen it happen. We've seen Evander Holyfield try to beat time. We've seen Ali try to beat time. We've seen Frazier try to beat time. You know what? You can't beat time. It's coming. And it may be this fight. Chad Dawson, he's young. He's hungry. It may be this fight. And if it's not this fight, it will certainly be the next one. So I think you cannot beat time. I haven't seen a fighter do it yet.
Right now, time as the Rolling Stones said, is on my side. Time wise, has been working for Hopkins. Chad Dawson, the hunger is one. Now you can be hungry as you want. If you have any talent, it don't matter. I think Dawson. I think anybody. I've said this before. There's only three guys in my mind who ever entered the ring who were unbeatable, and you weren't going to beat them. The first Ali, the great Marion Boykin, the Marion B. Boykin. Hosted the greatest boxing show in the history of television, in the universe, in our lifetime, any lifetime, working on boxing. B stands for Black, Bodacious, Brilliant, and a Brother. Said, you do Ali in trilogies. The first Ali, the guy that they stripped, nobody ever beat him. Nobody could have beat him. He was undefeated. Nobody would have beat him. Boom. Sugar Ray Robinson, welterweight, 77 overweight, gets his first title shot. Beats Tommy Bell. Doesn't lose his first fight until he fights a middleweight, 94-0. Ray Robinson is welterweight. That Ray Robinson, unbeatable, 72-1. And Montreal came in as a lightweight, two weight classes up to beat the great Ray Charles Leonard, the great, even greater, Roberto Duran at 135. Those guys are unbeatable. So no surprise to see any of these guys today lose. I mean, even Floyd, Pacquiao, for all intents and purposes, has lost. And, you know, Bernard is just such a boring, dull fighter. You have to kind of always question the caliber of guys that he's fighting. And something that you brought up there, Jonesy, is that the fundamentals of today's fighters and today's athletes in per se, bigger, stronger, by no way stretch of imagination, you know, are they better? You know, Rooney, this is a great thing too, Rooney. You know, you talk about bigger, stronger guys, and yet there's a pitch count. If they're bigger, stronger, if they're better, how come they can't pitch nine innings, Rooney?
Great question, Doc.
If you're bigger and you're stronger, and you're better, and you got the weight room, and you're eating properly, and you got all this. And you, the pitch count.
Doc, and I tell it to my wife all the time. Can you imagine coming out to the mound and taking Bob Gibson out of a 3-0 game that he's winning? He would look the manager back to the dugout.
He did it. Sally Hamus tells the story of him coming out to get Gibson. He was sent out by the manager to get Gibson. He was coming out to get Gibson, and Gibson told him, "Don't you make another step."
Could it be that the seasons, as far as the season goes, maybe a lot of these owners, you know, with their franchise pitches, are trying not to overwork them so that they can get more use out of them for the season. That be a train of thought? I mean, because I sit back sometimes and I agree with you 150%.
You're only playing eight more games, First Lady, and you're pitching every fifth day. Tom Seaver told me something. I never get it. And I round the batting cage, and I said, you know what? I said, I shocked him. I said, I used to think you were a great pitcher. He looked at me and said, but, you know, check it out now. You were a great, great pitcher. I said, if you were around today, you could win 500 games, meaning that, you know, he would go seven innings. And he's I'll never forget what George Thomas Seaver told me, the only man to strike out 200 batters 9 years in a row. George Thomas Seaver, the first pitcher to win the Cy Young Award without winning 20 games. George Thomas Seaver won 311 games. George Thomas Seaver, who's in the top five, when you look at strikeout, he told me, one word he told me, bullshit. Okay? Like he said, I'll never forget. As he told me, he said, bullshit. He said, Rooney, you got to go every fourth day and you got to go at least seven innings. And if you look at Nolan Ryan, whose first name is now people don't, you know, Tom Seaver's first name is George. His name is George Thomas Seaver. Nolan Ryan is Lynn to Nolan Ryan. It's ironic that these two guys use their middle name. And Nolan Ryan in Texas, he ain't having it. Guys are going nine innings. Guys are pitching. And it's a sad thing, Lady A. But, you know, all these guys follow suit. And that's something it seems that our Caucasian brothers do. And one guy has a successful story about a guy that has two gifts and a horse. All of a sudden, TV has eight shows like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know,
like reality TV.
Yeah, right.
Straight up joke. Yeah.
Yeah. And now, if one guy goes that way, everybody wants to go to the other. Dusty Baker, the only African American manager to win Manager of the Year three times, and Dusty told me, "I'm not going to bring Mel in to pitch to a right-handed batter that he's hitting 372 against him, but I'm going to bring Mel in to pitch to a left-handed batter, which is so-called against the book, and the white guys wrote the book, but this guy's hitting 072 against Mel. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to go by the book and bring Mel in against a guy that's hitting him, or I'm going to bring Mel in against a guy that's not hitting him."
Let me say what the difference is. When I was younger growing up, learning baseball and watching baseball, if a guy pitched five and two-thirds, gave up, say, three runs, we'd say, oh, man, such and such pitched a real mediocre game today, man. This homeboy pitched a lousy game today, man. Now, if a guy goes five, two-thirds, gives up three runs, it's, as you said, considered a quality start.
But the game has changed. The game and the mindset has changed so much that look at what's obsolete. And, Doc, you mentioned two pictures. You mentioned Nolan Ryan and you mentioned George Thomas Seaver. Being that I'm a New Yorker, I know both of these pitchers well. I follow their careers. Mm-hmm. The complete game is obsolete almost.
Yeah.
300 innings in a season is almost obsolete. 300 strikeouts is just about obsolete because these guys are – even though they're weight trained, they have personal trainers, they make a zillion times more money. Six innings, done. Seven innings, done. And that's a quality start now. ERAs are high.
Yeah.
Doc, he's talking about the mindset, Doc. But I think it's just you could say that across the board for just about all the sports. These guys are so coddled. It's a joke.
Lady A, Mr. G, Mel Cosell, 1997 All-Star Game, a writer comes to the greatest all-around player that ever played a game of basketball, and I still think the best, Oscar Palmer Robinson. And he told Oscar, and the insinuation I felt he was telling Oscar that, you know, today's basketball players, basically these black guys, are not cognizant of the guys who went before them and paved the way. And Oscar said, hold on. No. This ain't just about basketball.
Mm-hmm.
He said, this is across the board. And it's not just in sports. He said, this is in vogue of our society. Doctors, lawyers, painters, teachers are not cognizant of the people who came before them. He said, so don't put this on basketball players. Don't put this on these black bats. Don't put this on athletes in general. He said, it's across the board in America that in our society, nobody in any venue is cognizant of the pathfinders and the guys who've come before them. And you bring such a tremendous point. And, you know, and me and Mr. G were talking earlier, and that facetious, tremendous lie that was perpetrated on Vincent Coleman about, I don't know nothing about no Jackie Robinson. Everybody who comes into baseball in any venue If you're 7 years old, if you're 70, there's two names in baseball you always hear right away. Babe Ruth, George Herman Ruth, Jack Roosevelt Robinson, Jackie Robinson. It's automatic. It's baseball one-on-one. Those are the two names. So there were people talking about, I heard them say it. And Vincent Coleman told me the story. You know, he said, I never said that. He said, Dick Young asked me, did I know that on this day in 1946, they signed Jackie Robinson, the Dodgers, to a contract with the Montreal farm team? And I said, no. Next day, there's this big story. I don't know nothing about no Jackie Robinson. And this is the same guy who begged the Dodgers not to bring Jackie Robinson up. Okay? This is the same guy, as the late, great Art Russ Jr. told me, would never call Jackie by his name. When Jackie came to the plate, he would say, here comes Captain Midnight. So, I mean, all of a sudden, he's defending Jackie. So, you know, you can't always believe what you read, and you got to be a little questionable sometimes of what you hear. You make sure the source is coming through. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake with an Eric Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Deaf is your show. DocStanleySports.com, that's the site that leads you into my Trust in God Sports and Deaf Hall of Fame. We've got a horde of different things. Something that we're talking about, uniquely autographed baseballs, me and my man Stephen Glazer from Fortaleza, Brazil. And a couple of unique balls I have autographed by athletes who actually, as it turned out, Michael Jordan did play baseball. I have an autographed baseball by Michael Jordan, an autographed baseball by General Westmoreland, an autographed baseball by Evander the Real Deal Holyfield, and a really prized possession, faithful with an autographed baseball by John Fitzgerald Kennedy Jr., who was a close friend of my friend Dusty Baker. And those are some of the things. And Doc Stanley, hit the site, DocStanleySports.com. Take a look. Everything's available. We've got sometime in the soon weeks, Smithsonian coming by to take a look at us. But don't forget, and more importantly, the great line my mother says, only what you do for Christ will last. Gang, we get back to Jonesy for a minute. Wow. What has happened to the Mets, Jonesy? What has happened to the Mets? The New York Mets.
The Mets are rebuilding. They're restarting. They've let a lot of what I think significant players get away. The Beltrans, the Rodriguezes. David Wright is still here. The Reyeses, you know, they didn't either have the money or decided not to put the money out to invest.
Jonesy, do you think, in a lot of ways, they use the excuse of this Manoff thing as a rationale or a reason not to pay these guys money?
That could be a factor. They're in a division where they can't afford. Look at the Nationals. How are the Nationals better than the Mets? You know, they got to play Philadelphia 18 times. They got to play the Braves 18 times. You know, now the Nationals are an improved team. You know, listen, after Memorial Day, don't even worry about the Mets. If you want to go see a competitive Met game, you better go before Memorial Day. Because after Memorial Day, they'll be close to being mathematically eliminated. So the competitive team in New York City is going to be in the Bronx.
It always
unless you want to watch reruns of the 69 and 73 and the 86 Mets.
As Warner Wolf would say, Rooney, let's go to the videotape. Doc Stanley.
Yeah, but that's true, Doc. Anything over 75 games for them would probably be crazy.
You know, how are you let a player of Beltran's caliber go? You don't replace him.
How about Reyes?
Better.
Huh?
How about Reyes? Same way.
But they paid. But hold on. But they ended up paying David Wright the money. Come on, stop.
Well, you know, and you saw that back when I remember they signed Reyes to like $16 million, and the next day they gave Wright the double that figure, and you never lose sight of that great line that Muhammad Ali says when you talk about people of Caucasian whites. He said, you know, the complexion of the connection, and it's always amazing in sports, and we talked about that the other day, how it's always a problem to play a minority player. There's always questions, you know, you don't know. I mean, you look at all that Derek Jeter had done, for the Yankees, Derek Sanderson Jeter. And I say two things about Derek. He wears number two because he's second to none as a person and as a ball player. Second to none. And here's a guy who came here. I remember my first year in New York, his first year in New York, uptown with John Starks and Larry Hardesty, two legends in the city. And he's there, too, at Thanksgiving, giving out his first year in the league, giving out turkeys, you know. And you look at Jeter. Jeter has been all Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be, all that Mickey Mantle wasn't. And, you know, how the Yankees have a problem coming to terms with him. And you know, and it's, you know, it's the amazing thing about Jeter, you know, it's the catch-22. When it's advantageous to the Yankees, I guess they lean toward the white side. And when it's, you know, the way they want to swing, they lean toward Jeter's black side, you know. And the credit to Derek Jeter. And the two things that Joe Torre talked about, and also my good buddy Buck Showalter, when we talked about Derek getting to the 3,000 hit flame, he said, you know, the thing that really is so amazing that this guy in a city of the kind of media that we have and the exposure and the visibility that he is supposed to have, how invisible he is to negativity, how invisible he is into situations of a negative appeal. You know, you never heard seen Derek Jeter drunk any place. You never heard Derek Jeter going through a red light. You never hear Derek Jeter stepping on somebody's toes. I mean, he's done a tremendous job.
May I interject for just a quick second? And apologize for interrupting. Do you know why Jeter has, outside of his play, do you know why he has survived and lasted so long in this city full of we're going to get you media? Do you know how and why, Doc? Of course you do, but to the uninitiated, the reason is, and we've all been, you know, obviously sports reporters, and me, thanks to you, but all of us have been reporters, Lady A. The thing is, he, to me, and I'm me personally speaking, he is one of the best, maybe one of the best in the world at making sure that you have enough to put into your notebooks, so your computer, so that you can file your story the next day, and basically make sure he knows you have a story to do, and very polite, make sure you have enough to put in your notebook, put in your computer, and Doc, for the most part, tells you absolutely nothing.
Rooney, are you talking about, Rooney, you talking about talking loud and saying nothing?
I mean, Doc, the man is a whiz. I mean, come on, Derek is very bright, obviously, okay? He knows we all have a job to do. He knows we have to meet those deadlines. He knows we have to file some type of story, whether it's his play that day or the Yankees winning, but he knows we have to file a story. He gives it to us, knows, you know, we need something to write about, something to type about, whatever. But for the most part, Doc, I mean, tell me anything that you learned about Derek that you didn't know 5 years ago. I mean, that is the best in the world at making sure you have enough and making sure you have nothing at the same time. That's great.
You know what? I see Derek. I say, DJ, you know, a.k.a. talking loud and saying nothing. Rooney, you and James Brown, boy, indispensable. Legends of your own time. And I kind of, Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake with Rainbow. So the channel Sports Up, the show is The Boxing Way with Lady A and Mr. Greg Jones, joined us, Jr., and, of course, Melko. So it's trying to get a hold
of... Doc, before you finish, I'm sorry. I saw the great James Brown once at something called the Brie Voice in Brooklyn.
Brie Voice.
I was 8 years old.
Wow.
I was 8 years old, Doc. And the reason I remember seeing the great James Brown is, I don't know why I was with my mom, a couple of cousins, and I don't know what I was doing in the aisle, but he trampled me, Doc, on the way to James. The girls trampled me on the way to James Brown.
You're lucky to be alive. Yeah, we got about 90 seconds. I want to hold on. We're going to do a little close out and do a little mic on lights up real quickly. Three thoughts to your life today as if it's stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others is the means you pay for your space on earth. And from the Bible, the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. I say from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. We're going to let Larry Hardesty close us out. And you hang on and we'll do a quick, maybe a few minutes of mic on, lights off. Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Depth. The show, DocStanleySports.com, from the bottom of my heart. God bless you all and trust in God.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth. And now what we'll do, we're going to do a little... Quickly, we'll just... Lady A, you're saying that you are picking Chad Dawson to win this fight on Saturday?
To be honest with you, Doc, I'm not impressed with Chad Dawson. I'm not really impressed with Bernard Hopkins either. I felt like the last fight, it's more like an MMA kind of thing I was watching, you know, like you really tackle guys and throw them down to the ground. I mean, am I right watching the right sport? You and I have always talked about how much Bernard Hopkins is a student of the game and a great student. He doesn't expend that much energy in the ring. He makes calculated decisions and, throws calculated punches. He doesn't generate a lot of high volume like, let's say, a Paul Williams in a fight. He's a tactician. He kind of uses decent strategy in the ring. I kind of would say in this situation, I don't know if Chad Dawson is going to be able to exploit him as much as people have thought. But at the same time, Bernard Hopkins is getting old. I see it go. If the fight makes it past six rounds, I think it'll probably end up going to Chad Dawson. But we'll see what happens.
Okay, and then we got.
I've been going back and forth with it. So, it's not a fight that I'm dying to go see either. So.
Right, not a fight. Okay, let's talk about the as we. It's amazing. I didn't think about it. Back to back Saturdays. I didn't really
realize.
Both of Kelly Swanson, the first lady of boxing, PR-wise. Thank Kelly, too, for the conference call today and all her beautiful notes, her and Lisa and the crew. Okay, well, we talked about that. What about... Hold on, gang. Quick plug here. Don't move.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul.
Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Network, Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports Endeavor Show, mic on, lights off. Okay, ladies, so what about next week? We got Miguel Cotto, who I think is a spent fighter, against the best fighter in the world, pound for pound, Floyd. Money. What do you like there?
I like Cotto, believe it or not. I think he's got a puncher's chance. I think, we're giving credit to Floyd Mayweather, seven-time and five-division world champion, but he decided to go up in weight class, for this fight. And I just think he's taking Miguel Cotto too lightly. I am really betting with my heart with this fight, and, because Boricua all the way.
Mm-hmm.
But, I look at it like this. You think Miguel Cotto spent? I don't. I think he's got a puncher's chance. He's an incredible body puncher. I don't think that Mayweather has gotten hit by a guy in that weight class before like Cotto. He is a good puncher. He's got a great body. He attacks the body well. Excellent hook. I think Floyd's going to have his hands full. He's
going to
have a chance for
our first lady and our sweetheart of boxing. First of all, you can have be the best body puncher. You can't hit, but you can't hit. He's not going to hit him. Pacquiao inflicted a nice amount of pain on him. He was running out of gas against Margarito, who had nothing. He's taken too many punches, too many hits. He uses too much of his body. I remember looking at his face after his first fight here and then his face after fighting Paulie Malignaggi. He's an outstanding fighter. Not having Emmanuel Stewart in his corner is another detriment. And it's possible. Like I said, he's not Duran, he's not Ali, and he's not Sugar Ray Robinson.
But you're forgetting one thing, too. Mayweather has changed his fighting style. and he's starting to fight more toe-to-toe. And if he decides to fight this guy toe-to-toe, I'm going to tell you right now, Miguel Cotto is the kind of fighter that will break you down with the body, and he'll get inside, and he'll knock you out. I'm telling you.
Well, you know, if anybody gets knocked out in this fight, which I'll lean Cotto, thinking that
Well, how many guys is Mayweather really knocked out, Doc? Let me ask you that.
Sweetheart, I'm not saying he's knocked out punch. And I did say, let me play it different. If anybody gets knocked out in this fight, if anybody gets knocked out in this fight, if anybody gets knocked out in this fight, that's what I'm saying, I'm leaning toward Mayweather. Because the thing that you have here is that Cotto has never fought anybody with this kind of speed and this kind of defense. And speed is what makes the hook such a devastating shot is that the mind doesn't see it. The mind and eyes don't see it, so you can't gauge, or you can't see it coming. Like I said, if anybody gets knocked out here, and understand that one of the drawbacks of Mayweather, he's not an aggressive fighter. Mayweather should have taken out Sugar Shane Mosley after the fourth, fifth round of that fight. Ray Leonard, Duran, Hearns, Hagler, Harold Weston, Cuevas, they would have took out Sugar Shane Mosley, would have not went the distance. So, I mean, you know, Mayweather doesn't have to kill, and Emmanuel talked about it, he doesn't have to kill the instinct that one should have. And he has a tendency to throw enough punches. But I think that if anybody gets knocked out in this fight, it could be the combination of his speed and the combination of the fight that, in my mind, I mean, I don't think Miguel is walking around on eggshells, but Miguel Cotto has had a lot of tough fights.
Hey, Doc.
Been, yeah, Jonesy.
Shane Mosley, he's a good fighter. He's an older fighter now, but he's a good fighter. He's a quality fighter. Sugar Shane Mosley. So I know in that fourth or fifth round, you know, you got to give Mosley some credit there also for hanging in there. And, you know, I just think this is a fight that that Mayweather should be able to win.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, he should be,
he should be able to win this fight.
Yeah, but the way I look at it, too, is Doc's, you know, alluded to the fact that, yeah, you know, he has speed, this, that, the other, but, you know, also it's basic mathematics. You know, when you cut somebody in angles and you take away their angles and you fight them inside, it's a totally different fight than what Mayweather used to fight before, where he was just hitting people and moving. You know, you're inside, it's a totally different fight. And, you know, I just believe that if you take somebody's speed away.
But if you look back at the fight against Arturo Gatti, man, how I miss him. You know, it was when Roger sick. I'm using that term, and we talked about after that fight, when he told Floyd to go inside and inflict them body punches on Gotti.
Yeah, but, you know, Gotti of old is not the same Gotti. Buddy McGirt changed his fighting style.
The body of old. This is the point. I think the age factor, the redundancy of having tough fights, and Mayweather's speed is going to be the difference in this fight. I think the bottom line is
mm-hmm.
Floyd Mayweather Jr. is just simply better than Miguel Cotto. Boom. Mel Cosell, the last word.
Well, Doc, it's funny that I'm kind of on both ends of this. I'm really going to give this to whoever can dictate the pace. You know, it's going to be on the ability of Cotto to make Mayweather rumble, and not just when he feels like it, Doc. He's going to have to be able to dictate the pace, take him out of his comfort zone, basically. If he can get Floyd out of his comfort zone, make him rumble, make him fight, make it tough, make it hard, something that he's not really that, you know, used to, and not to go to fight. He wins. However, otherwise, his speed, ring generalship, the ability to use the shoulder, as I call it, he's the best in the division at using the shoulder, warding off punches, giving you angles. Otherwise, if he's able to do that in fights and flurries as he usually does when he feels like fighting, then his speed and ring generalship will carry the day for him.
Who wins? Who wins? And we're going to have you be the first one. Let's go back to Mr. G, I guess, and Lady A will close it out for us. Our sweetheart and first lady. Doc Stanley Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Network, the show. Lady A, the boxing way, as she co-hosts and leads us in this here boxing review, as we also DocStanleySports.com, the Trust in God, Sports in Depth Artifacts Hall of Fame. Take a look there. They're all there. I got a boxing briefcase here that kind of blew my mind a little bit. I just decided to get some autographs on the briefcase, and wow. And looking through some other things, I looked at on some of the artifacts I've had. Some of the great names in boxing, one of the great pictures I had is autographed photo of Carmen Basilio, who beat Sugar Ray Robinson, and Archie Moe, who has the most knockouts in history of boxing. Rooney, who wins Timothy Bradley, Manny Pac-Man Pacquiao?
Well, you know, I don't doubt that Bradley's a good fighter. I think after this point that he's still undefeated, and this could actually be his time. But I just think that Pacquiao has one more good, at least one more good rumble in him. It's starting to get the clock starting to turn a little bit, but I think he still has one more good, brilliant, you know, really tough, you know, by, even though Marquez showed up a lot.
One last hurrah.
But I think he has one more hurrah left. I think he beats Timothy Bradley, guys.
G.J. Jones Jr., the Timothy Bradley against the Pac-Man, Manny Pacquiao. Who are you taking that one?
Got to go with the Pac-Man.
Why?
Speed. Determination.
How much do being a southpaw be an advantage for him in this fight, Jonesy?
You can't stop speed. It's an advantage. It can't stop speed. Speed is speed.
Okay, so
experience and determination. I think ultimately.
Just before we go, I remember having a bunch of conversations with Mike Tyson, and I remember us having this conversation over, and I remember him saying that. Everybody thinks, man, it was just my power that used to get me over, but it was like it was my speed, man. Most of the time, the guys never saw the shots coming.
You're telling me, Rooney, what exactly Michael Spinks told us after he got knocked out. When Mikey said, I was groggy. Wasn't out, but I was looking for him. The combination of Tyson's speed and him throwing a punch counter to what Spinks was looking for was the difference. And once again, when the eyes don't see the punch, the mind can't prepare for it, and bango.
Yeah, doctor.
And that's what makes the uppercut such a devastating shot, because you're looking at the guy, and then bam, uh-oh, here you go. Velcro sell on the case again, telling it like it is. Ladies and gentlemen,
the first lady
of sports here on the Sports in Depth, Trust and Guard, our beloved sweet lady. Lady A, you've given us your synopsis on Mayweather and Cotto. You told us who you like in Dawson and B-Hop. Who wins the Pac-Man against Timothy Bradley?
I want to say Pacquiao. I don't think anybody other than Marquez has shown that they have, that they can really stop that straight left. It seems like he's just been dominating lately with that. And, you alluded to the fact earlier about how much of a difference is it going to make that he's a southpaw. Timothy Bradley's an orthodox fighter. I've seen Timothy Bradley fight, and the guy's just an absolute warrior in the ring, and he's always been able to make certain adjustments in the ring. I saw that fight with him and Lamont Peterson, he showed me something. He's won the last, he's won a lot of fights lately. I see he's not going to be a pushover for Pacquiao at all. Every round he's going to be fighting to the end. But, in the end, I think Manny Pacquiao is just too much for him.
This is better. All right, Lady A. Lady A, the boxing way, Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul is the channel, Sports Network the show. We always want to thank you very much and allude to the fact that we want to always check out our good friend Crystal Hart Tuesdays at 9 p.m.
How's she doing, Doc? How's she doing?
She's good. Also want to remember her and our prayers for her dad. Also, my good friend Josie Annie in Fortaleza. Her mother is in the hospital on a respirator. Always shouting out across the way to Brazil to my dear friend Rosie. Out there to Algeria, to Rosa, my man Leonardo, Brazil. Steve Glazer in Fortaleza, 250 miles from the equator, 85 degrees every day. Asking you all that you keep us all in your prayers. Crystal Hart, Tuesdays at 9 p.m., Time Warner Cable 56, RCN Channel 83, and Verizon FI05 Channel 34. Keep us all in your prayers, and more importantly, those three big thoughts, that great line from Dr. Martin Luther King. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Ali's line, service to others, is to make you pay for your room on earth. The line that Larry Harvey loved so much, live your life today if you stand before God tomorrow. And the Bible tells you that the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. I seem to say from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. Lady A, going to let you close it out. Tell everybody good night. Mr. Jones, love having you. We're here back on, Blake Radio. You want to make a donation, www.blakeradio.com. Make a donation. Want to always salute our First Lady of Radio, Deirdre Shuler, and our CEO, Neil Blake. The rest of the posse will be here on Sunday. DocStanleySports.com, that's the site. Thanks, Big C, for working on that for me. DocStanleySports.com. DocStanleySports.com. The Trust in God, Sports in Depth, Artifacts, Museum. Take a look at that. And we've got some of anything and everything. Lady D was stunned when she came and she was visiting. She said, Doc, you got an autograph. Gordie Howe, stick. The Golden Jet. What a great play. Lady A, I'm going to let you tell everybody good night this time. And then Larry Hardesty will say farewell. We're back here on Sundays, 9 to 11. That time is subject to change. With Sports in Depth, we have a Sunday final. That's a two-hour special. We'll probably try to get Leonard Ellerbe, if we can, between now and Friday to talk to us. If not, we'll try to snatch it sometime next week. He's the right-hand man of the great. And he's a great fighter today. None other than the best fighter, pound for pound, in my mind, around Floyd Mayweather Jr. Lady A, tell everybody good night. And then we're going to go and hope all to see you on our next show. Lady A.
Buenas noches, con mucha paz y amor.
No one need to be said. And this time she was talking to everybody and not just Harold. God bless you all and trust in God. Larry Hardesty, you can come on and tell him now if you want to. We're through greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, which means he's the greatest of all times. Mr. Larry, the legend, ESPN sideline reporter for the New York Jets, and my friend, how blessed I am, Larry Hardesty.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Stanley Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Depth Show. Guest today, Lady A, Greg Jones Jr., and Mel Cosell Jr. Sports in Depth this Sunday, 9 to 11 on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports in Depth is the show. Thanks for joining us, and join us again on Sunday and the next show here on the Blake Radio Network. God bless you all. Trust in God.